Eon sighed. I am who I am. I need an army, and I need people to take care of that army. There will always be slaves, youngling, but perhaps we can adjust how we treat them. I'm not without some feeling. I know how the slaves look upon me and my soldiers. The cruelty was necessary in the beginning. They had to understand their place, so they wouldn't try to escape. Perhaps you coming back to Sarka and helping me improve conditions will show some goodwill toward our slaves. What was he playing at? Eon was actually attempting to be nice. It was the strangest thing ever. Sure, he still had a streak of madness, but he seemed to genuinely be trying to connect. Or that was what it felt like. I know you gave up a lot to come here. You gave up your family. I did hear you last night. I won't go near Earth if you keep your promise. I hope one day you'll come to feel about me as you do your brother. I would like that. Remy had no idea what to say to that, so he asked a question instead. Jael told me you had creatures in the lava out there. Is that true? Eon's eyes narrowed. Yes, but why do you ask? Remy pointed to the dragons. They're still babies for the most part. I don't want any sort of fire creatures hurting them. If them being out here is too dangerous, I need to know. Eon's expression cleared. Of course, the lava is teeming with the fire creatures. I've bred them myself over the years. I've already instructed them to leave your dragons be. Wait, you instructed them? Eon laughed. Yes, I instructed them, I bred them, and I have genetic code built into them that allows me to program them much the same way we do with our biomechanical dogs. They're mine, and they listen only to me. Your dragons have been safe from the moment you arrived here months ago. Thanks for that. Of course. Eon straightened from where he stood. I will let you enjoy the rest of your morning up here with your beasts, but I do require your company at lunch. There is much to discuss, and I'm eager to see what you have learned. I'll have your guards escort you to me when the time comes. Eon gave Remy one last assessing gaze and walked away, leaving Remy with more questions than answers. But he had to figure this cuff out and soon, because he had to steal the serum and get out before Eon made him do something that couldn't be taken back. Sighing, he turned back to the dragons. At least they were having fun. Chapter 11 AJ AJ was less than half a kilometer away from the ship when he heard the first roar. An icy hand gripped his spine. He recognized the howl. It was the same noise that came from one of those giant cat-like creatures he had seen before. "The Kymors!" Alpha Prime shouted. He lifted a closed fist into the air. All the Imperial Coalition soldiers behind him stopped. "They smell flesh," Omega One said, as she ran up to join them. "It's a pack. With this much meat on the ground, it'll draw their largest numbers." AJ had no desire to meet the massive creatures indigenous to Dextrax. It had nearly been lunch for one already. "How many can there be?" Rambo asked. Her head turned in all directions, scanning the landscape for any signs of the giant cat-like creatures. "I mean, we have a freaking army with us here. They'd be crazy to attack." "They're brutal strategists and burrow beneath the surface of the snow," Omega One cautioned. "Yes, we will defeat them no matter what. But at what cost?" More roars permeated the air around them. They were closer now. "Are you hearing that?" Ellie Wong's voice came over AJ's comm unit. "What is that?"
"Tell her to close her exterior doors," Alpha Prime warned. "If a Kymor is allowed to get inside, it will be twice as deadly in a confined space."
"I thought we would have enough time to board and be off." Omega One clenched her metal hands by her sides. "I should have suspected they would be hungry this time of year."
"But you're out in the open," Ellie insisted. "If you hurry, you can make it. I..."
Ellie's next words were cut off as a lump of snow exploded by the open doors of the Relentless. A giant white predator crept close enough to pounce.
Its white fur acted as perfect camouflage against the terrain of Dextrax. AJ watched in slow motion as the Kymor leapt at one of the Marines standing outside the cargo bay doors. His scream was short-lived. The Kymor was nearly as tall as the mechs, and many times longer. Muscle rippled under the creature's fur. It tore into the Marine, taking his head from his body. Powerful jaws with teeth as long as K-bars chomped down, dragging him down into the thick snow. Boom! 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 Everyone holding a weapon lit up the air with bullets, blaster fire, and even rockets. Hold your fire! Hold your fire! AJ immediately saw what was about to happen. Yes, he had a deadly army of mechanized soldiers at his back, but they were so close to the Relentless, they would not be able to fire without striking the hull. Ellie, get in the ship! Close the cargo doors now! AJ followed up his order. Get your people inside! All around the exterior of the ship, more and more of the Kymors leapt from their hiding spots. They pounced on Marines with deadly accuracy. Inside! Everyone inside now! Ellie screamed. AJ didn't have to wait to hear over the comms for that one. They were close enough now he could hear her loud and clear. Another Marine went down, and then another, before the ramp started to close on the ship. They're gonna lose more men, Rambo warned. The ramp doors are closing too slowly. One of those things is gonna get in. Tell your soldiers to charge. AJ turned to the two leaders of the mechanized forces. Tell them only blunt instruments. We can't afford to damage our own ship. AJ sprinted forward as soon as the command left his lips. He strapped his weapon to his back. A warm, tingling sensation curved through his left arm as his appendage turned from a human-looking limb to a long blade resembling a katana. Alpha Prime and Omega One must have relayed the orders to their troops by a means other than oral communication. A second after AJ gave the order, mechs sprinted for the Kymors. AJ was soon overtaken as the much larger mechs brandished the butts of their rifles. Those who carried shields, swords, and axes prepared their own weapons for battle. Despite sprinting as fast as he could, the mechs would reach the Kymor first. There were at least a dozen of the creatures. Some feasted on their kill, while others jumped up, trying to wedge themselves between the closing ramp and the ship. Fire erupted from inside the Relentless. AJ could hear Ellie's voice giving orders, but not her exact words. Weapons firing inside the cargo bay of the warship sounded like thunder. AJ half expected the Kymor to turn tail and run at the sight of such a force descending on them. Apparently, they were a lot braver and more stupid than he thought. Instead of abandoning their kill, the Kymors decided to meet the first wave of mech warriors head-on. The Kymors roared their brutality as they sprinted to meet the new threat. Never in his life had AJ witnessed two powerhouses like the ones in front of him collide. The sounds of tons of meat striking and rending the metal hides of the mechs was like nothing he had ever heard before. The mechanized soldiers didn't scream in pain, neither did they yell their war cries. The Kymors, on the other hand, did all the above. Growls, yelps, and roars filled the air as the creatures did battle with the mechs. For what the Kymors lacked in numbers, they made up for in surprise and mobility. AJ was wrong. There were a lot more than a dozen of them now. Two and three times more. Kymors abandoned the safety of their hiding places, burrowed in the snow, and pounced on the mechs. They struck quickly and efficiently, never spending more than a few seconds on a target before moving on to the next. AJ soon found the superior number of the mechs more of a hindrance in this kind of fight than a help. The soldiers were more inclined to use long-range weapons or blasters, and were less proficient with the hand-to-hand weapons. Not only were they slower than the Kymors, but there were so many of the mechs brawling in the same small space, it was easy for them to hit one another. Rambo, Jones, and AJ soon reached the front lines, where the fighting was the fiercest. Omega One buried deep into the skull of one Kymor with her massive broadsword as another tried to take her head off. Rambo placed a round with her high-caliber rifle between the eyes of the Kymor. It wasn't enough to penetrate the alien cat's thick skull, but it was enough for the beast to lapse momentarily, as its head exploded in a shock of pain. Omega One took the opportunity to shake off the creature. She freed her sword from the other corpse, looking over at Rambo with a nod. AJ was about to turn his sword arm into a rifle when he heard Jones yell a warning,
"Incoming! Get down!"
Jones yelled over the sound of rending metal and animalistic screams. AJ didn't see what Jones had, but his trusted friend's warning was enough for him to comply. AJ hit the snow as hard and fast as he could. A mass of white fur sailed over him and streaked into Jones. Jones crumpled under the force. The Kymor bit into his leg with steel jaws.
"No!"
Rambo shouted. She was so close, she could press the barrel of her weapon into the flank of the beast.
Boom, 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 boom!
AJ rose to his feet. Adrenaline soaked his veins from his head down to his feet. The animal on top of Jones was writhing thanks to Rambo's attack, but the colossal creature was far from dead. Instead of planning his attack, AJ only attacked. The sight of Jones under the alien animal was enough to drive him to the edge of mania. He jumped on the back of the creature, the act only possible because the beast was low over Jones's body. With a single Herculean act, AJ drove his blade through the creature's back. His sword arm sank deep into the beast's soft coat. The animal roared in pain. Blood spattered through the air like a broken sprinkler. Instead of letting go, AJ reached for the grenade on his belt. Rambo saw him make the move and emptied her clip into the creature's flank. Not to be outdone, the beast of Dextrax crashed into her with the side of its body, sending her hurtling backward. AJ slammed the grenade into the open wound in the creature's back. Pulling the pin off the grenade, he transitioned his arm from a long knife point back into a limb. Immediately, he lost his anchor on the beast. AJ flew off the creature's back. AJ hurtled through the air, coming to an unforgiving stop as he slammed into something hard behind him, then sank down to the snowy ground.
Bam!
The back of the Kymor AJ was just on exploded in a shower of blood and messy chunks. The creature wobbled on its feet, taking a few steps to its right, and fell down, still. There was blood in AJ's eyes from a cut on top of his head. He looked behind him to see what stopped his body. A downed mech with sparks coming out of where its helmet used to be lay on the ground behind him. All around, more and more mechs joined the fight, until what few Kymor remained decided to make a run for it. AJ saw this through his peripheral vision. Right now, his eyes focused on the well-being of his friends. Rambo slowly rose to her feet, an arm over her ribs. AJ brushed the sheet of blood falling into his eyes once more. His head rang like an anvil at a master blacksmith's. White-hot pain came from a laceration on the top of his head. He ignored it all as he made his way over to Jones's still body. The big marine lay beside the dead Kymor. He wasn't moving. His eyes were open, but unseeing.
"Jones! Jones! Talk to me, buddy!" AJ said, stumbling toward his friend. "You're okay! You're okay! Talk to me!"
Jones blinked once. Then twice. He reached down and wrapped a knuckle on his metal leg.
"If that cat had tried to gnaw my other leg, I'd have a pair of these. What are the odds it would have tackled me on the leg I already lost?"
"I'd say 50-50 if I had to guess."
Rambo joined them. She slapped a fresh clip into her rifle.
"AJ, you have a nasty cut on your head."
"I know." AJ sighed a huge breath of relief. His thoughts were coming slower than normal. He understood that was because of the blood loss. Still, he had a job to do. AJ rose to his feet and helped Jones to his own. The battle around them was fierce but short-lived. At the end of the day, the mech's superior numbers had won them the battle with few casualties. No more than 9 mechs were in various stages of disarray, while at least twice that number of dead Kymor lay on the ground in front of the ship. The battlefield was silent for the moment, as everyone took a second to look over the blood-laden ground.
"I hope this isn't what we're going to have to look forward to in Sarka," Rambo said.
"No, once we reach Sarka, we'll have full use of our weapons, and so will they," AJ said, motioning for the mech warriors around them. "Sarka isn't going to know what hit him. Emperor Eon won't be prepared for us. Come on, let's go."
Chapter 12. AJ. Inside, the warship was even more impressive than the outside. It smelled like a new car. No, better than a new car. It smelled like the new war machine that it was. The cargo bay where the mechs lined up was massive. A few of the smaller Imperial Coalition and Praetory ships even fit inside. True to his word, Alpha Prime and even Omega One ordered their troops to line up in tight single file. This allowed nearly a quarter of their fighting force to fit inside the USS Relentless and be ready for deployment when they touched down on Sarka. AJ and the rest of his team, along with Jael and Sister Magdalene, boarded the warship after the run-in with the Kymor. The mood on the craft was bleak after the loss of life. Still, they had to move on with the mission. What other choice did they have? Three Marines lost their lives to the giant snowcats of the planet Dextrax. That was another three families who would never know the truth as to what happened to their loved ones. They would be told they died in the line of duty, but not about the alien adventure they had been a part of. This idea tainted the wonder of the warship, as AJ and his team waited inside for Ellie Wong to show them to their quarters.
"Hey, where were you?" Jones asked, turning to the two Sarkans. "When the fighting happened, where did you two run off to?"
"We were there alongside you, looking to offer what aid we could," Jael shrugged. "Without any weapons, we're a bit useless in a fight."
Jones looked like he was going to say more. Instead, he shut his mouth. A woman in her 30s walked toward them. She wore large black-framed glasses on her nose. Her hair was set in a messy bun on top of her head. The gray suit she wore was stained with blood, not her own. "Ellie Wong?" AJ asked, extending a hand, then retracting it. "I'm not sure if I should salute or how to properly greet you, ma'am."
"You don't have to salute me," Ellie said. She looked down at her bloody suit with a long, sad stare.
Like any good soldier, she realized that there would be a time to mourn later. Right now, people were looking to her to set the tone.
"I'm part of Marine Space Corps One, but I came from the private sector. I'm just overseeing the maiden voyage of the ship because I'm the one most familiar with the tech."
"Understood, ma'am," AJ said, looking to his team in turn.
"This is Chrissy Rambo, Rick Jones, Sister Magdalene, and Jael." AJ noticed Rambo flinch at the mention of her first name. She hated that name with a passion.
"It's good to meet y'all,"
Ellie said, looking at them each in turn. She waved a hand for them to follow as she turned and exited the cargo bay.
"We'll be taking off soon, but I have a few minutes to show you to your quarters. Oh, and you don't have to call me ma'am."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Yes, Sally,"
AJ caught himself. Ellie led the unit through the massive cargo bay to an elevator waiting for them on the opposite side of the closed ramp doors. Everything inside the warship was painted in varying degrees of grays and blacks. The elevator itself was a dark silver and large enough to accommodate all of them at once. Even with Jones's large shoulders, they were able to fit into the cylinder-shaped elevator with room to spare.
"How long will it take to reach Sarka?"
Jael asked, still amazed at the size of the ship. Clear glass windows in the elevator allowed them to see out as the doors closed.
"The trip won't take more than 2 days from Dextrax," Ellie answered. "It'll give you just enough time to rest and recover before we send you out again."
How's this possible?" Rambo asked.
She looked out the glass panels in wonder of the technology the ship possessed.
"I had no idea the military possessed the ability to create ships like this."
"Well, officially they don't," Ellie answered. "It's only due to the technology given to us by one of our allies that we're able to have this at all. The Draconians even helped us build it."
"A Draconian?" Jones said, looking down at his metal leg. "That's where my leg came from."
"And General Breaker's arm," Ellie said with a hard smile. "I was there the day you lost it."
The elevator came to a soft stop before AJ could ask any of the dozen questions that popped into his mind. The doors opened without a sound.
"This is the barracks level, as well as where the cafeteria is located," Ellie said.
The group moved down the wide, well-lit halls. AJ could hear Jones mutter things of awe under his breath.
"You'll each have your own room,"
Ellie said, motioning to doors on the left side of the hall wall.
"The ship was built to accommodate over 20,000 Marines. We only need a fraction of that number to staff the ship."
AJ peeked inside one of the small rooms. It was tiny, but more than he expected. He was still used to sharing sleeping quarters with his unit.
"Take your time to rest and get some food," Ellie said.
turning to go.
If you need the med bay for any reason, it's one level below you. I have to get to the main deck to prepare for our departure.
Thank you, AJ said.
If you need anything, just let me know,
Ellie smiled again, then walked back down the hall. Well, I guess it's a hot shower, chow, and bedtime. Jones stretched arms the size of AJ's leg. I'm beat. All eyes swung to AJ for orders. That sounds good, AJ told his team. Don't get too comfortable, because in 2 days, we land for the invasion. Remy will have the serum to give the rest of our Marines, and the gateway will be open. It's almost over now. Everyone nodded, turning to find their own quarters. AJ slipped into his own room that wasn't much more than a bed and small showering room. AJ closed the door behind him, already thinking of his little brother. He's gonna be all right, AJ reminded himself. He's gonna be all right. In a way, AJ had to believe this because the alternative wasn't an option. It was a scenario he refused to consider, no matter how hard his subconscious pressed for it. Instead of dwelling on the thought any longer, AJ stripped off his jacket and the gear underneath. He didn't realize how dirty he was until he removed his clothes. The jacket he wore had splattered gore on it, thanks to his run-in with the Kymor. His undershirt and fatigues were soaked with sweat despite the cold temperature outside. The bathroom was barely large enough to hold the toilet, sink, and shower. The shower itself wasn't more than a meter long by a meter wide. A shower head protruded from the top of the ceiling to make use of every square inch of space. AJ wasn't complaining. A hot shower was a hot shower, whether he was in a Vegas suite or a warcraft headed for enemy territory. As the water hit him, so too did his current reality. Events around him moved so quickly over the last few months, it had been nearly impossible to sit down and let it all soak in. Aliens were real. He was on a ship bound for intergalactic war, and his left arm wasn't even his own. AJ soaked up and let the steaming water run over his head and back. He turned his left arm around, studying the dark gray nanite material. It was truly a gift. He could see that now. After the pain of losing his arm, he saw his new appendage as something that made him stronger, not weaker. He knew Jones felt the same way about his leg. Losing a part of you might make you seem somehow less to anyone who didn't know you. But AJ knew the truth. He had fought through and dealt with things the average person would never be up against. Through the fire, he had come out stronger than ever. AJ toweled off in the small room. His stomach reminded him that it had been far too long since his last meal. Luckily, new fatigues had been provided for him and lay folded on his bed. A light rap on the door caught AJ as he buttoned his pants. "Yes?" AJ asked, reaching for his undershirt.
"It's me," Rambo said from the other side of the door. "Seeing if you want to grab some chow."
"Yeah, come in," AJ answered, pulling the shirt over his head.
"I feel like I can eat a horse right about now."
Rambo opened the door, her wet blonde hair combed behind her head. She wore clean dark olive fatigues and black boots. AJ pulled on his shoes and socks as he tried not to stare at the sniper. He'd always known she was attractive, but spending this much time with her made him realize she was much more than just attractive in his eyes.
"Why are you looking at me like that?" Rambo asked with an arched brow.
"I didn't forget you called me by my first name in the cargo bay either. I owe you one for that."
"If I introduce you as Corporal Rambo, Sergeant Rambo, thank you very much," she corrected him.
"You're not the only one climbing the officer ladder here."
"If I introduced you as Sergeant Rambo," AJ corrected himself, "she might have thought I was joking. Your last name isn't exactly unheard of."
"Yeah, story of my life," Rambo said with an eye roll.
"You try being the kid who's raised after those movies came out." "Chrissy," AJ said, willing to brave her rage to use her name one more time. "I don't want to wait to have our first date until we get back from Sarka. I'm not sure what the mess hall looks like, and it's not what I want it to be like, but I'll make sure the second date is extra special to compensate."
"Well, you're getting a little ahead of yourself already talking about a second date." Rambo arched her eyebrow, continuing to tease him. "Why don't we see how date one goes first?"
I can live with that, AJ said, joining her at the door. He motioned her forward. After you.
And don't think I missed you using my first name for the second time, Rambo said. That's two I owe you now.
AJ closed the door behind him, and the two made their way down the corridor toward the mess hall. Sounds of Marines eating met their ears. Luckily for them, the mess hall was equipped to hold many times the number of Marines on board the Relentless. The mess hall was a wide-open room with a cafeteria-style serving aisle on the far side. In the middle, bench seating lined the floor. A series of not cooks, but animatronic metal arms with ladles, stood ready to serve on the opposite side of the food aisle. Jones leaned back from a table, patting a full belly.
You two gotta check out how they serve food here. They have these robotic arms set it to the opposite side of the rows of food. You just press the glass in front of the food you want, and they serve it for you. This place is like a futuristic buffet.
You already done? AJ asked, half in surprise and half relieved he and Rambo would be able to share their meal alone.
Food waits for no man or woman, Jones said,
pointing to his protruding stomach. He pushed away the two empty trays in front of him.
I'm off for a shower and bed.
Jones rose from his seat, giving his friends a knowing wink.
You kids behave yourselves.
He left without another word.
Well, it smells good, Rambo said, as she and AJ made their way to the end of the line where a stack of clean metal trays and plates waited.
AJ handed her a tray and plate before he took his own. The rest of their time together was spent talking about the technology that served them their food, laughing about past memories, and enjoying one another's company. They opened up to each other about their family lives, their fears, and plans for the future. They sat for hours, getting to know one another on a deeper level than ever before. If AJ knew what the future held for them when they sat down on Sarka, he would have never left the table.
Chapter 13. Remy. He tinkered with the cuff. It let off a keening wail that had guards rushing into his room right after he yanked his shirt off. They stared at him, and he stared at them for a heartbeat.
What are you doing?
The biggest of the two demanded. Getting dressed?
Your bracelet went off,
the guard stated suspiciously.
The cuff on my shirt sleeve started shouting at me.
Dude had to go and call it a bracelet, didn't he?
Remy shook his head in disgust. Bracelets were for girls. Cuffs were more manly. The guy didn't believe him. Truthfully, it hadn't caught in his shirt, but that was his story and he was sticking to it.
I don't believe you,
Remy shrugged. Believe it or not, I don't care. The snarl that appeared on the guard's face would have quelled most men, but he'd been through more than most. He'd seen men die. The other guard placed a hand on the Sarkin's shoulder.
Gam, it's fine. You can see the boy's in the middle of getting dressed.
Convenient.
Remy rolled his eyes and finished putting on his shirt and buttoning it up. Hades came and perched on his shoulder. The little guy was getting heavy, and he winced at the weight of him.
Can one of you shut this thing off? It's making the dragon's ears hurt.
The guard who wasn't Gam came over and pressed his fingers in a certain spot on the cuff. Remy paid close attention without appearing to. The truth was, Hades watched the guard and showed Remy what he was seeing, while Remy called Zeus and Poseidon down from the rooftop rafters.
The Emperor asked us to escort you to him,
Not Gam said, releasing his arm.
Are you ready?
Yes, but I need to let the dragons out.
Remy walked over to the window and opened it, allowing the three dragons out. He asked them to get a good idea of the landscape between here and the mountain range. He warned them about the lava creatures, but he felt them laugh at him. They weren't concerned about them any more than the Emperor was, but for entirely different reasons. Remy barked a harsh warning at them to stay away from the lava, and their laughter tickled his mind. If this was how AJ felt when Remy went rogue on him back on Dextrax, he owed his brother an apology.
They've grown since you arrived.
Remy left the window open in case they wanted back in before he got back, and turned his attention to the smaller guard. This one had neon orange hair, and his armor was more than a little tight. Guy needed to cut down on his food intake. He seemed nice enough, though.
I'm Remy.
He stuck out his hand, and the guard eyed it curiously. Where I'm from, people who've just met shake each other's hands. It's a ritual.
Oh.
The guard reached out and awkwardly gripped Remy's hand. I am Norgo. Remy gripped the guy's hand and gave it a good shake. Nice to meet you, Norgo. Make sure you grip the person's hand and shake it solidly. Lots of people judge a man on his handshake. You don't want to appear weak. Gam snorted, but Norgo nodded solemnly.
I will remember that, Prophet.
Please, just call me Remy. He motioned to the door. I'm as ready as I'll ever be. Norgo nodded.
Come along, then.
Where are we in the castle, anyway? Remy asked, as they headed down the first flight of stairs. I want to go exploring later, and it's probably best if I don't get lost and wander into places I shouldn't be.
That would be a wise move, Remy,
Norgo corrected himself.
You are in the uppermost level of the castle, in one of the turrets. The Emperor thought your dragons would enjoy it.
They do, Remy said with a laugh. I think they've grown a foot since we arrived yesterday.
They are fire beasts, Gam said snidely. Of course they thrive in their natural environment.
Remy ignored him. Think you guys can give me a tour so I know what's off limits and what's not?
Of course, Norgo assured him. Right after your meeting with the Emperor.
Awesome, Remy thought to himself. This way he'd know exactly where the serum was, and it'd be that much easier to get to it when he figured out how to get this cuff off his wrist without alerting the guards. They found Eon on the balcony outside the throne room. He was having lunch. Some kind of purple-looking fruit was on his plate, along with what looked like some sort of meat, only it was blue. Weird.
Ah, youngling, good morning,
Eon smiled at Remy, and there didn't appear to be anything other than friendliness hidden there. Remy wasn't stupid, though. This guy was being friendly only because he wanted something from Remy. Emperor? There was a roar above them, and he looked up to see Zeus diving into his brothers. Remy chuckled as he took a seat at the table. Even his worries slammed into him. They were diving way too low. What troubles you, Remington? Eon asked, sipping from his small cup that looked more like a teacup than a coffee cup. Remy sighed.
I know you said the lava monsters will not attack them, but I can't shake this feeling they'll come up out of the water like that Dinocroc from Jurassic World and snap them up.
Eon frowned.
I am not sure of the place you are talking about.
It's not a place, but a movie I watched back on Earth.
What is a movie? Eon cocked his head curiously.
It's a story that is told on film.
When Eon frowned, Remy explained what movies actually were and how they were filmed and distributed for people to watch.
It is a form of entertainment that people pay currency for the right to see.
Eon chewed at his bottom lip.
Much like our tournaments, then.
I don't know about your tournaments, Remy pointed out.
Ah, yes, we'll have to change that.
Eon settled back into his seat with a sly smile. I think you will enjoy them. Our best fighters get into a ring and fight until there is a clear winner.
We have those back on Earth. Boxing and mixed martial arts fighting. MMA, we call it. Loads of people go to the main event and even more pay to watch it on TV.
Our research on your home planet showed us they have quite a few fighters, but are more concerned with fighting each other than having a planetary main force.
It's true. The nations of Earth have fought against each other on more than one occasion, but if you dug into our history past a cursory glance, you'd see that our nations come together when it matters, and the good guys always win.
Eon gave him a level look and nodded.
I did notice that, but it took a long time for those factions to come to a resolution. That is where their weakness lies. If there was one main planetary force, that weakness would be minimized.
Does all this talk mean you're gonna invade Earth after you told me you wouldn't?
Remy hid his fear behind anger. Anger wouldn't be seen as a weakness. Eon was a man who jumped on a man's weakness and held on like a dog with a bone.
No, youngling, I am not going to invade your home world.
Remy caught the slight stress he put on the word I, and his gut twisted.
He was sure the Emperor had allies throughout the universe, or at least people who were too terrified of him to not do what he asked. It was possible for him to not step foot on Earth, but use others to do it for him. But Remy couldn't comment on that. He had to keep Eon from thinking he was onto him.
"I'm sorry I asked, but I haven't done anything to make you trust me," Eon finished for him. "I did cut off your brother's arm, after all."
Remy's nostrils flared, but he pushed back all the anger trying to take over. He hated Eon for what he did to AJ, but if that showed through his demeanor, all would be lost.
"I won't tell you I'm still not angry about that, because I am. It was cruel, and way too extreme.
But it was necessary," Eon told him. "He'd attacked one of my men, and the usual punishment for that is death. What I did was merciful. Your brother lived."
"Pardon me if I don't see it that way. I probably wouldn't see it that way either if our roles were reversed, so I will not hold your anger against you."
Eon popped a piece of the fruit into his mouth.
"Have you eaten yet?"
"No, but I'm not really hungry. The food from last night and this morning didn't set too well with me." He'd had a massive case of diarrhea most of the night. The stomach cramps had started right after the dragon's playtime this morning.
"You'll get used to it," Eon told him. "Most of our slaves had the same problem, but their digestive system eventually adapted, as will yours."
"No, thank you. He'd be out of here soon enough." "Is there a reason you wanted to see me so early?"
"Many reasons, but I am told your alarm went off." Eon watched him carefully.
"An accident. I was getting dressed and it caught on my shirt. I guess I pulled too hard and it went off."
Eon looked as if he believed him about as much as Gam did.
"You don't believe me," Remy shook his head. "I get it. I do. Same way I didn't believe you about not invading Earth. We don't trust each other yet. That will come with time and our actions. I really was getting dressed. Ask Norgo there. He ran in seconds after the alarm went off. I was pulling my shirt over my head."
"You know your guard's name?" Eon asked, his tone deceptively soft.
"Yeah, back on Earth it's customary to know the names of the people around you. My parents taught me to always be respectful and mind your manners around strangers. It would be rude of me to not have introduced myself and gotten their names."
He really hoped he hadn't gotten Norgo in trouble.
Eon was silent for several heartbeats.
"That is not how we do things on Sarka. You do not socialize with the guards. They serve a purpose, and if they are chatting with you, then they get distracted from that purpose."
He'd gone and gotten them in trouble.
"You are forgiven, as you do not know our ways, but my guards, on the other hand..."
Remy saw both their faces pale and his gut clenched.
"They will be dealt with."
Oh, man, what would he do with them? Maybe if he could distract Eon, he'd forget about it.
"You said there were many reasons you wanted to see me. What were they?"
Eon turned his attention back to Remy, and he almost wished he hadn't asked. There was a feral look on the man's face.
"You were able to come through the archway without the sphere. I want to know how."
"Whoa, back up.
Why do you think that?"
"Because the spheres have fixed locations.
Your entry points are tied to where the sphere is located. That is why mine is in a secure location, as I'm assuming is the one on Earth. To appear in my throne room means you did not use the sphere."
Well, dang. He'd never considered that. Jael told him once if Eon knew he didn't have to use the sphere, the man would never let him go. As dangerous as that was, lying to him now seemed even more so.
"You'd be right. I don't need the sphere to travel."
Eon's eyes lit up brighter than the starriest sky.
"The prophecy is true.
Everyone keeps talking about a prophecy, but no one's really explained it to me."
"Then we shall remedy that immediately."
Eon wiped his mouth on his napkin and stood.
"Come, Remington Cole, I will show you your past, your present, and your future."
Chapter 14. Remy.
Eon led Remy through the heart of the castle, and he made sure to memorize every detail. They passed by several promising doors. He was betting he wouldn't be getting that tour from Norgo later. "This is the library," Eon motioned to the massive double doors in front of them. "It is maintained by the Sisters of Eon. Since Sister Magdalene and Jael's defection, the order has undergone severe changes. The traitors have been outed and dealt with, leaving behind only those of true faith and loyalty to the Empire." And that was a very unsubtle way of telling Remy no help would come to him ever again through the sisters. Point taken. He hoped that wouldn't be the case, but the choice had been taken from him. "You are free to use this library whenever you wish," Eon continued, and pushed open the doors. "The history of the known universe lies within these walls. It would do you good to get up to speed on it." That didn't sound ominous, did it?
Right.
Remy's jaw dropped open when he got his first look at the library. Bookshelves went 100 feet or more into the air and lined up perfectly in massive rows. There had to be at least 1,000 rows. Books of every size, shape, and color were on full display. It was a book lover's dream. His mom would live in this place. She loved books, from trashy romance novels to biographies. She wasn't a book snob. She read anything and everything she could get her hands on. "It is quite an achievement," Eon said, smug satisfaction written all over his face. "It had taken us hundreds of years to collect all this. My great-great-grandfather started this library with a few meager books, and now it's the biggest one in the universe." Remy whistled. "It's massive." Eon laughed. "This is only the surface. This library goes down 30 stories beneath the castle. Sister Tara, could you please bring us the Tome of the Ancients? The prophet wishes to read the prophecy." The woman, dressed in a habit much like a nun's, scurried away, her head bowed. They all seemed to be cowering, but then if Eon had killed members of their sect, Remy understood their fear. "Tell me, youngling, do the youth of Earth spend much time studying history in libraries such as these?" Eon asked, bringing Remy's attention back to him. "No, not so much. We have school, of course, but we learn things mostly on the Internet. You don't know something, you Google it."
"Google?"
Eon asked, confused. "What is a Google?" "It's a search engine. You have engines that go out and do searches?" It was Remy's turn to laugh. "Not physical searches. It's information that can be found by using Google's search tool." "Ah, I see. We have something like that in our information devices here." The Sarkans had computers, too. They just didn't call them that. Something Remy had learned back during his first stay here. "It is hard for you to open the archway without the sphere?" Eon asked, startling Remy at the abrupt subject change. "No, but using the sphere is easier," he admitted. "There's less mental strain with the sphere, and I don't feel drained afterwards." "How long does the portal stay open when you don't use the sphere?" Eon motioned to one of the big wooden tables, and Remy dropped into a chair beside it. "Or does it close quickly?"
"What do you mean?"
"Well, with the sphere, it stays activated until it's manually shut off. Being an inanimate object, there is no physical or mental strain on it. Your mind, however, is quite opposite. Like the first time you saw the sphere and you were overwhelmed. Freyon tells me you blacked out."
"I did," Remy replied. "I'm not sure. I usually just open the gateway and close it minutes later. It's open only for enough time for us to go through."
"You've already been to other planets?" Eon questioned. Remy nodded. "Just to try out what I could and couldn't do. Jael helped me."
"My sister has become a friend?" Eon asked.
"Yeah, she's been really good to me."
"Do not trust her.
She is not all that she seems."
"Neither are you," Remy countered, and the Emperor laughed.
"You have me there, youngling."
If Remy hadn't seen just how cruel Eon was, hadn't had the Emperor threatened to use his brother and his friends to keep Remy in check,
You wouldn't believe this was the same man. It was beyond weird.
You're conflicted, Eon remarked.
You seem different than before, Remy admitted.
Because before, you didn't come to me of your own free will, and I've learned over the years to do what I need to in order to keep my people safe. I got the impression you wanted no part of your gift, and I needed that gift. I had to use your brother and your other protectors against you. I wish them no harm, but it was necessary to bring you to my side. You are here now because you want to be here.
I wouldn't say that exactly, Remy hedged. I don't want to be here. I'd rather be at home. But I'm here so my people can be safe.
And I respect that, Eon said. More than you know.
Huh. Maybe there was a good side to the Emperor after all.
Now, back to your ability to open the archway. You haven't tried to keep it open for extended periods of time, then?
No.
Then we'll test that today. It's good to know your limits so we can work on pushing them.
Why would I need to hold it open for long periods of time, though? Eon looked up from the book he was skimming.
Remy, you and I are going to bring peace to the known universe. That's going to require to fight at times, and that means our forces will need to be moved through en masse. You'll have to hold the door open long enough for troops to move through if the sphere is unavailable.
Well, dang. He hadn't thought of this before. How was he going to bring all of Earth's forces through a gateway if he couldn't hold it open long enough? Their plan would fail if that happened.
Don't look so upset, youngling. Eon patted his shoulder. It is going to take time to harness your abilities. Today we begin your training, and you'll soon hold the power of the universe at the tips of your fingers. Ah, here is Sister Tara.
The sister struggled under the weight of the book, and Remy jumped to help her. His mother would beat him if he didn't.
Here, let me take that for you.
The book was twice as heavy as it looked, and even he struggled to keep from dropping it.
What is this thing made of, lead?
Eon shook his head.
You'll need more strength than this, youngling. You'll begin training with our soldiers tomorrow as well.
What? Remy asked, as he let the book fall to the table.
Why do I need to do that?
Because you need to know how to defend yourself and use a weapon to do so if necessary.
Strength means you can keep up with the other soldiers, and they will respect you more. I want you to feel valued and respected, and will give you the tools to make that happen.
You're important to me, Remy. I want you to feel comfortable coming to me, giving me your opinions, even when they differ from mine. I want you to know you matter to me outside of your abilities. You're special, Remington Alexander Cole, and I want us to be friends.
Wow. The guy knew how to spin it. He was offering Rem something he'd given appendage to hear his own brother say.
AJ didn't respect his opinions. At least he didn't seem like it. He proved that back on Dextrax. Granted, Remy also learned to respect the chain of command, or people got hurt. But that sting from AJ was still blistering inside. He wanted the respect of his brother.
Show me this prophecy, Remy said, his voice a little gruff.
Of course. Eon slid the massive book over to him and started gently turning pages.
The book is fragile, so touch it as little as possible. We keep it in a climate-controlled room, but being outside for a little while shouldn't harm it too much.
Why don't you have it backed up on digital? Remy asked.
What do you mean?
Back home, all the important information is scanned into a computer and saved to a hard drive or in the cloud so it's not lost in case the original is destroyed.
That is an excellent idea, youngling. Perhaps you can show our librarians how this is achieved?
Sure, Remy said. And he meant that, too. It would be a shame for all this information to be lost. Who knew how many civilizations' histories were gathered here? He wasn't much of a history buff, but even he understood that. When Eon stopped flipping pages, Remy looked over and frowned. It was in a different language.
I can't read that.
Did you not receive the language serum? Eon frowned.
Freon gave me something that allowed me to understand what he was saying.
Ah, he gave you the interpretation serum. We have one that allows you to read any written word, no matter the language. We'll get you that now. Then come back and read the prophecy. I'd rather you read it for yourself so you'll trust what it says.
Remy fought to keep the excitement off his face as he stood and followed Eon out of the library and down several hallways and two flights of stairs. The dark black rock gave way to shiny sheets of black metal.
"Is this material different from what the rest of the castle is made of?"
he asked as they walked, his fingers running over it.
"Yes, it's what our scientists call smart metal. It can form itself into anything, but for the purposes of our research department, it keeps the place sterile and absorbs heat and whatever else is thrown at it. It can absorb the shock of a full-on atomic blast and not dent."
"Then why not use that in creating the castle? I'd think you'd want the same protection for your home."
"Because the castle is well protected on its own. The lava creatures are a big part of that."
"But what if someone snuck up on you and was able to get off a rocket or something? Wouldn't the castle be better protected with this stuff?"
"That would never happen," the Emperor dismissed.
"Humor me and pretend it's possible."
Eon shook his head, amused. "Okay, youngling, there is a reason no one has ever gotten past our defenses. We have layers of protective measures a good 5 miles out in every direction. We'd see them coming before they even knew we were onto them, and they'd be met with the full Sarkhan force. Don't worry, you are more than protected within these walls. I am not undefeated for no reason. I'm smart enough to look to the future, see the threats, and make plans to thwart those actions."
"Good plan. It's what I'd do," Remy told them, and they stopped in front of another set of doors.
"Place your hand here,"
Eon instructed, as he pulled his own from a small pad set in a depressed section of the wall beside the doors. Remy did as he was told, and the pad lit up green. "The pad scans your DNA sequence to give you access.
Jael made me register my DNA signature when I went to the Sphere Room."
"Yes, I knew we would bring you home, so I did not have it removed. Jael's, however, has been. That little traitor sets foot inside our perimeter, and she will be sorry." Now there was the Emperor, Remy knew. He had steel in his eyes and the promise of pain in his voice. The doors opened, and Remy stepped inside to see a dozen or so scientists working on various projects. He followed Eon to the left, and had to input his DNA fingerprint again. But this time, he walked into what looked like a cold storage room. A Sarkhan woman jumped from her desk when she saw Eon and Remy.
"Emperor," she said, bowing, "I did not know you were visiting us today."
"Our prophet needs the language serum so he may avail himself of the library," Eon told the woman.
"At once, my liege."
She ran over to one of the fridges and opened it, pulling out a vial, which she loaded into one of those archaic-looking guns that resembled a caulking gun.
"This will only hurt a moment," she told Remy, and placed the gun at the base of his skull.
"I know the drill," Remy muttered, and almost screamed when she pulled the trigger. White-hot pain lanced through his head, and he bit back every foul thing he wanted to say to her as he waited for the pain to recede. Only it didn't. His vision blurred, and he swayed.
"Remington?" Eon's voice sounded miles away, and he tried to take a step forward, but he fell just as the world around him went dark.
Chapter 15. AJ. If it weren't for the fact AJ was on the way to another planet to engage in warfare, and his brother could be in jeopardy, he might actually enjoy his time on the USS Relentless. The first day on the ship was more peaceful than he could imagine. A hot shower and a warm meal shared with Rambo were exactly what he needed. He didn't realize how much about the woman he didn't know. She was one of the strongest people he had ever come across, and that was saying a lot. The first night, after AJ said goodnight to Rambo, he fell onto his bed and was asleep before his head hit the pillow. With his slumber came a dream he wouldn't remember in the morning. AJ stood atop the battlements of the Sarkin stronghold. Heat and smoke choked the air all around him. Both in the battlements with him and as far as he could see, there were bodies everywhere. Sarkin soldiers in heavy battle armor lay still, their weapons scattered all around them. Heavy Praetorian Max and Imperial Coalition soldiers lay sparking and broken along with them. Marines, his own brothers and sisters, lay unmoving on alien soil. The body count brought bile to AJ's mouth. Already the stench of deceased Sarkins filled his nostrils. One would think seeing your dead enemies would bring a sense of joy, but it didn't at all. The only joy AJ felt at the moment was that this was over. He had no desire to watch Sarkin pitted against mech and marines, slaughtering themselves for the insanity of a bloodthirsty emperor. AJ looked down a good 200 meters from his position to see the burning Sarkin city dying before his eyes. Shouts and screams peppered the air. Explosions and weapons fire told him the fight was still taking place. He needed to help wherever he could.
"You should never have come."
AJ wheeled around to see Emperor Eon himself appear from a door set inside one of the castle towers. The Emperor was tall, with a flowing red cape. He wore dark gray armor. His right hand, made of nanite technology like AJ's own, formed a long sword.
"You should have stayed on your own planet,"
Eon said, approaching AJ's position. Malice lived in his eyes.
"You've come a long way to die."
"I have come a long way," AJ answered, turning his own left arm into a barrel of a familiar weapon, an M16A4. "But I'm not the one doing the dying today."
"You think any of this matters?" Eon barked a laugh. "My city and castle could burn, and I will still end up the victor. Yes, you surprised me by employing the mech warriors I built so many years ago, but that's as much as I'll give you. You have won nothing this day. I still hold the prophet, and with him, power."
"Where's Remy?" AJ fought the desperation from his voice.
"Where is he?" "Oh, he's taken care of,"
Eon said, stopping 10 meters in front of AJ.
"Before I kill you, I want you to see something."
AJ watched as Eon turned his arm from a sword to a kind of glowing bright green torch. The flame was brilliant to the point AJ had to shield his eyes. Eon waved his arm over his head back and forth, signaling something.
"To the north," Eon said with a smile. "Look to the north."
AJ didn't trust Eon in the least, but curiosity held on to him now. AJ took a step back, leveling his weapon at the mad emperor. He chanced a quick look to his right to see the unimaginable. To the north of the castle and the city beyond, lakes of fire rolled and swam with lava. From these lakes, creatures emerged. They had to be massive to be able to be seen from such a great distance, impossible beasts from the very depths of a child's nightmare. They came from the fire with long-reaching tentacles. The most disturbing thing? They made no noise. At least none AJ could hear. By the dozens, these creatures pulled themselves from the lava. AJ's mind tried to make sense of what he was seeing. The closest thing he could relate these animals to were giant mutated squids able to move across land. He was too far away to see any eyes or mouths, but somehow he knew they were there.
"The Dulmaga have been protectors of my planet going back generations,"
Eon informed him.
"They answer to only the Emperor of Sarka. Beautiful, aren't they?"
"Not the word I was going to use to describe them," AJ answered, unable to tear his eyes from the creatures.
"But whatever floats your boat."
Eon laughed out loud, a sound not of joy, but pure mania.
"Now that your force has entered the city, there will be no escape for them. The Dulmaga will cut your troops down to the last mechanized warrior and marine you have brought with you,"
Eon informed him.
"You have lost."
AJ clenched his jaw and turned to address the mad ruler. We have lost nothing yet. AJ lifted his weaponized arm to aim at Eon's head. Call them off, or I'm going to spray your brain matter all over your castle.